Today is trumpet call, and I realize there's some of you going, what? What is trumpet call? Well, I will tell you. Typically, we have one every like 5 or 6 weeks, but this is our first one this year, so you haven't missed anything. Typically, what trumpet call is, it's just a time when we take the principles that we've been learning in class, and we dig a little bit deeper, and we take time to take those principles and apply them to one specific issue of our lives. And then you have the opportunity for your group leader to pray for you one-on-one, not in your group setting, but you'll go to your group room and your group leader and assistant will spend a little bit more time praying for you on that specific issue. So that's really what it is. That's what we're going to do today. And I'm not really going to do a lot of teaching. I'm going to share some testimonies, which I hope will be teaching in and of themselves. Because they go along with a lot of what we've been studying with Ruth and Naomi. You know, they went to a land that they did not know and had to make some difficult choices. So when we get done, I'll walk you through the worksheet. The verses that I'm going to share, every verse I'm going to say is on this paper, so you don't have to worry about copying it down. There are verses I'm not going to say on this paper. They're just verses that God used to speak to me this past year, and I thought they would bless you because they blessed me. And then I will go over the back of this worksheet when I'm done and tell you what we're going to do with it. So you can just listen, and if something hits you, a phrase, a word, whatever, a strategy, if God gives you something, then please write it down. Or you can go listen again on the web later on. So any questions before we start? Okay. I'm going to share two testimonies, and if you've been here longer than this year, you have probably heard this first one. You may have heard it more than once if you've been here for a long time. But I wanted to share it because it ties into the second testimony that I will share. So the summer of 2006, we're going back a while, God was redefining for me what it meant to be his sheep. So he was giving me, I'm a very visual person, so he was giving me these visuals. And whenever I thought about, you know, being a sheep, you know, those all those paintings that you see, there's one in the bride's room, actually, of the green field and the fluffy little sheep and the brook flowing. And I could so get into that, y'all. I'm like, yeah, I'm a sheep. Give me some grass to graze on. I can go drink from the water when I feel like it. I can chill out with the other sheep if I want to. You know, the shepherd is over there. He's got his eye out. He's watching. And if, you know, things get too tough and I can't handle them on my own, he'll intervene, right? I'm good. That really fits my independent pose. So that summer of 2006, God showed me that I really wasn't getting the whole picture. That yes, we have the fluffy little white sheep by the brook, but we also have the lame sheep, and we have the injured sheep, and the sheep that have just been pulled from the lion's mouth. And when he gave me that, I remember I was at a summer retreat, and when he showed me that, I was like, almost out loud. But I said, God, I don't want to be the lame sheep. Please don't make me be the lame sheep. Everything in me just screamed, don't make me be the lame sheep. And quickly, the sweet way he does, he said, but Dana, it's the lame sheep that gets carried close to the Father's heart. Because, you know, the lame sheep he carries around his neck. And I thought, oh, that's really sweet. And your head's right next to the heartbeat of the Lord. And I said, but God, I don't know how to do that. I have no idea how to be carried. I know how to take care of things on my own. You're going to have to show me what that looks like. Would you please show me what that looks like? 2 months later, I found a lump in my neck, and I'm thinking, sinus infection, swollen lymph node, go to the doc in the box, get some antibiotics. So I did, went to the doc in the box. I'm like, hey, sinus infection, lymph node, I need some antibiotics. And she goes, that's not a lymph node. She starts to freak out. Okay, long story short, this starts a string of doctors and professionals freaking out. It was my thyroid, she told me, and basically the word they gave me is, it could be nothing. It could be cancer. It could be really bad cancer. And we think, well, we're pretty sure it's really bad cancer. So it would go. I would go from person to person, and they either had one of two responses. They were either, okay, we got to get this done. We got to get this done because this is bad. We got to move. Got to this doctor. Go to this. Or they had that attitude of, bless her heart. She doesn't know that she needs to be really scared right now because this is really bad. So they either had that one of those two attitudes. Those are the professional people that know what they're doing, right? Well, all my friends and relatives, they were anywhere from really concerned to freaked out. And so this whole time I'm going, okay, God, now should I be freaked out? okay, now should I be freaked out? Because y'all, I wasn't freaked out. Was so not freaked out. The whole time, I was like, la, la, la. And I wasn't in denial. It was, I knew that I knew God was answering my prayer to teach me what it looked like to be carried. So I knew from the get-go. So y'all, I was like soaring above my circumstances. Everybody's freaking out, and Dana's up here. And it wasn't because of my circumstances, because I really thought I had cancer. They were almost sure I had cancer. I didn't have cancer, which was good. I had half of my thyroid taken out, and it was not cancerous. So I was thankful for that. But it sort of didn't matter whether I had cancer or not, honestly, because I was so thankful for what he taught me. He taught me that he was my shepherd, that he would come through for me, that he would be there for me, be with me. He taught me how to walk in relationship through hard stuff. So it really wasn't about the end result. Whether I had cancer or not was not the issue. It was the nearness of God that was my good throughout the whole time. And so he taught me that it's way better to walk through stuff like that with him than to do it independently. Because independently, y'all, when you're in a situation you can't control, I mean, what is your option? Freak out, which is what most people did. So it was really neat because I knew on the front end that he was trying to free me from my self-reliance and he wanted me to be carried, then I had eyes to see it. So at the end of all that, I went from like going, please don't make me be the lame sheep, to like, I'm the lame sheep, I'm the lame sheep. I mean, I wear my scar as a smiley face and I love it. And it reminds me, I'm the lame sheep. And I feel like I have special privileges because I'm the lame sheep. It doesn't freak me out anymore. Used to, health stuff would freak me out. And Satan could really get me. I have fibromyalgia and migraines and the list. But so used to, that was a way that Satan could get me. And really, y'all, it's not anymore. I mean, not that I don't struggle with stuff, because I do. But it doesn't freak me out when stuff like that happens. I'm not going to say have learned, but I'm learning how to walk through it in relationship. So I'm proud to be the lame sheep, because I know my shepherd way better. So that's my first testimony, and it brings me to the next one. So we're going to fast forward to a year ago. I think all of you are mothers in here, right? So you can kind of relate to a lot of what I'm going to say. But if you are like me, you spend a lot of your time wondering if you're even doing a good job. I spent a lot of time wondering if I was doing a good job. If you're set in your mothering and you know that you're the best mother ever, great. But there's probably somewhere in your life, someplace you're called, where you kind of question, am I doing it right? Do I come through? Do I have what it takes? So you probably feel ill-equipped at some point if it's not your mothering. My big issue is my mothering. Most of you know that all my kids are adopted, and we got them all at one time when they were toddlers. So, you know, I didn't have time to warm up. I just kind of got thrown into the fire, and I've been on warp speed. I started on warp speed, and I've just kind of stayed on warp speed ever since. I began this Bible study less than a year after we adopted our kids. So the whole time, 15 years, I guess it's been 15 years, Kathy has always told me, you are the perfect mother for your kids. Now, please hear me say, it is not because she has observed my stellar mothering skills. I mean, she's seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, mostly the bad and the ugly. But it's because of what God says. Because God is sovereign, because God's plans stand firm forever, because God doesn't make mistakes, and God ordained it. That's why she would say, I'm the perfect mother for my kids, because God put me as the mother of these kids. That's the only reason that she would say I'm the perfect mother for these kids. So I knew that in my head, and I mean, not that Kathy's a liar, I believe her, but my insides didn't believe it. I would spend a lot of time in the morning on my knees saying these things out loud. God, I know your plans cannot be thwarted. I know you don't make mistakes, but if you really loved my kids, you'd fix me. If you really loved my kids, you'd make me better. If you really love them, this thing that I'm struggling with, you'd fix it. And y'all, I spent so much time grieving over my failure as a mother. And y'all, I'm not an axe murderer. I don't beat my children. I mean, I'm not a horrible person, but I would feel like a failure. I mean, there's so many days I just felt like I fell short. Why didn't I do this? And why did I yell? And why did I fuss? And stuff like that. It's not, you know, please don't think that I'm over there beating my children, because I'm not. But just that constant feeling of being a failure. hopefully someone in the room can relate. I would remind God often, God, you know time's running out. You know they're not going to be here much longer. I mean, come on. I mean, you've only got so much time. Yeah. I would do that. I was sure. No other mom struggled with what I struggled with. I mean, because my situation was unique. I mean, I got my kids all at one time. Most people had, you know, a chance to be pregnant and have the babies. And so nobody else struggled with what I struggled with. I mean, I started behind and just stayed behind. And it was just, that was all my issue. And I would never catch up. And it wasn't fair, is what I thought. So that was how the most of the last 15 years went. I would have victories, of course. I mean, y'all have heard me testify. I had victories. I would have breakthroughs. I would have healing. But I was convinced it was only by the grace of God that my kids were still functioning in the world. That was had nothing to do with me. It was just, whew, you know, by the skin of my teeth, my kids are doing okay. Every retreat that I would go to, I would usually take some issue with my kids. And last January, one of the big issues that I took is I just needed some more faith. I just didn't believe. I did not believe that this thing that Kathy and Debbie had told me all these years was true, that I was the perfect mother for my kids. I thought, this is the one time God slipped. I went, oh, crud, I didn't mean for that to happen. I was convinced. So I asked God for an extra measure of faith. You know, I know, y'all don't ever struggle with that, do you? I'm sure you don't. That's what I'd asked him for, was an extra measure of faith. So then we get to last year. My oldest is 19. And before I get too far into this testimony, I want to tell you that I have asked her permission to share the stories that I'm going to share. And she gave me full permission. And I asked her why, and she said, because it's a really cool story, Mom, and people need to know. So she's pretty fabulous. So anyway, she knows that I'm going to tell all this. She is a typical introvert. She's perfectly content to be with her book in her room or on Facebook or texting a friend. She is a typical teenager, but she's also an introvert. So, you know, she's often exhibited signs of teenage drama. If you have a girl, if you have a teenage girl, you know what I mean. If you have a little girl, get ready, it's coming. Teenage drama is all it's cracked up to be. So, but like a year ago, I started noticing some things to me that just didn't make a lot of sense. And seemed to be outside that typical teenage drama category. And so I just kind of started, it's just sort of I paid attention. I could easily write it off to the fact that, you know, she was adopted when she was four. You know, she's got, she's behind because she just didn't have a lot of what she needed when she started out. She's behind socially and emotionally. Just makes sense. I could write it off to that. So I did. Just wrote it off. So then, almost exactly a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, she attempted suicide. And that was kind of a red flag, y'all, that there was more going on than what we knew. So thankfully, she was unsuccessful. And so she's still here. And, but it got our attention. It really got our attention. So I talked to her about why she did it. You know, why? Because we had no idea that it was that bad. And so as she just shared with me what was going on in her head and in her heart, there were connections that were being made that didn't make sense to me. I thought, how could you get from that to that? It didn't make sense. So it caused a lot of fear in me. Number one, because I couldn't predict. I couldn't predict, okay, if I say this, then this is what she's going to feel, or this is what she's going to think, or if this happens, then this is what she's going to do. The paths were not connecting. So it caused me to be very, very fearful because I like to be in control. I like to be able to predict. I like to think I'm pretty smart, and I can figure things out. I'm Dana the Fixer, Dana the Fixer, so I can figure things out, and I can fix them. Couldn't figure this out. Couldn't fix it. So I was like, okay, God, I don't get it. And then he reminded me, hey, Dana, don't you remember you're my sheep? So, yeah. He said, and don't you remember, you know what it feels like to be carried above your circumstances. I was like, oh, yeah, that feels really, really good. So I thought, okay, I want to do that again. But this time it wasn't me, y'all. It was my child. You can mess with me. Don't mess with my kid. Do not mess with my kid. I mean, you can all relate. The mama bear comes out. Do whatever you want to me. I can take it. But not my child. Not my child. So I had to make a decision. Was I safe? Number one, to climb up on God's shoulders and rest and let him take care of her? Could I trust him to carry her? That was the question. And that's when that song that we sang, When I Don't Know What to Do, became my lifeline. And literally, that's what I would do. I was like, okay, Lord, I surrender to your strong and faithful hand. In everything, I'll give thanks to you. And I did. I gave him thanks. And I'll trust your perfect plan. When I don't know what to do, I'll lift my hands. I would walk around my house like this. I'm just like, okay, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to lift my hands, okay? When I don't know what to say, I'll speak your praise. When I don't know where to go, I'll run to your throne. When I don't know what to think, I'll stand on your truth. Y'all, this is one time I did not know what to think. And when I tried to figure out what to think, it did not go to a good place. So I literally had to stand on that. So that's what I did. We got her in to see a psychiatrist. And so, because that's what you do if your, you know, child tries to commit suicide. And she began treatment for depression. And that was obvious that she had some depression going on. But we still had lots of questions. So we were told to see another doctor for some testing. And so I have to take kind of a side bar, because this is where God starts to show out and do his provision thing. In case you guys don't know, any kind of psychiatry, psychology, counseling is expensive. Just FYI. And in case you don't know, we've been in a recession. And so the money flow in the Smith household is not very big. So that was a concern, honestly. It was just like, crud, what are we going to do? Here we are, we're waiting for this appointment to go get this testing done. We don't know anything about this testing. And I'm an artist. I became an artist a few years ago, and I paint. And so I have a website where I sell stuff. And I think at that time, the most expensive thing I had was $95. Not so much. So I got this email from this lady in Canada. And so she saw a painting that I did, and she wanted like a big, big version of it. And then she wanted something to go with it, big to go with it. So I have kind of a formula that I do per square inch to figure out pricing. But when I did the formula, it was, I thought, I can't charge her that. So I just prayed. I was like, God, what number? I just need a number. What am I supposed to charge this lady? And $900 was the number he gave me. And I thought, she's still going to go, thanks, but okay, never mind. Well, I told her $900, and she was like, okay. So I got started. So we go to our appointment to talk about the testing. And he says, yes, I think we need to do this battery of tests. It's 5 hours, da, 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 and it's $900. And I went, of course it is. Of course it's $900. Now, that did not tell me, so therefore you should do the testing. But it did tell me, pay attention. God is here. God is at work. He is on the scene. So I did. I began asking God for confirmation. Not long before all this stuff started happening, we hired a new pastor, a shepherding pastor at our church. And my husband was head of the committee to hire him. So they became fast friends. And he's a unique individual. He is a former senior pastor, former counselor, specifically with teens. He specialized with teens. He was one of the first responders to the Pentagon, 9/11. He was a deputy sheriff. I mean, he wears all kind of hats. So he had... he knew us, he loved us, he knew our family, and of course he was very gifted in all these areas, so we asked him his opinion. He's authority over us. And I don't know about y'all, but typically, you know, when you ask somebody, you get the, well, I will pray for you, and gosh, it's a hard decision, and well, you know, I have some suggestions or some input. You know, that's what people do, and it's great. He was adamant. He said, get the testing. You need to get the testing. We did it for my daughter, and he said, listen, if you went to the doctor and they told you that your daughter had cancer, would you be satisfied with that? Or would you want to know specifically what kind of cancer she had and what was the best treatment protocol for that type of cancer? I was like, well, of course we'd want to know what type of cancer it is. He said, same. I was like, okay, that's what I needed. That was my confirmation. So we proceeded with the testing. So then we had to wait three weeks for the results. Longest 3 weeks. But I needed the 3 weeks for God to do some work in me. He spent a lot of time comforting me. I really received from him. I received his presence was just really comforting to me. And he needed to prepare me for what was coming. one thing that the doctor was pretty sure of one diagnosis. And so the next Sunday at church, we had communion, and Bob, our pastor, was saying, before we take communion, I want you to give thanks. And you know, Kathy, that's her thing. Have you given thanks? Every time I call her the problem, she always says, well, Dana, have you given thanks? And typically I roll my eyes, either outside or on my inside, and I go, no. But y'all, seriously, why does it take me this long to remember that she's going to ask me, have you given thanks? That day when he said, I want you to give thanks, it was like God just immediately give thanks for this diagnosis that the doctor told you about. So I did, and I just did it by an act of my will at that time. You know how you do. I thought, oh, okay, well, you're telling me to do it, so God, thank you for that. So after I got home, I started journaling about it because I really wanted to, with integrity, give thanks. So as I journaled about it, this is what I wrote. I said, I can truly give thanks with integrity based on the following truths. Before this came to our daughter, before it came to us, it came through the hands of God. Therefore, it is his instrument in her life and in our lives. It will accomplish his purpose. And if it is his will, which obviously it is, then it is good, pleasing, and perfect. So then I could truly give thanks for that. And for whatever else was to come, I still didn't know what we were going to hear, so I could give thanks for all of it. One of the passages he gave me during that 3 weeks was Deuteronomy 1, 29 through 31, and it's from the God's Word translation, I believe. It says, then I said to you, don't tremble, don't be afraid of them. The Lord your God, who is going ahead of you, will fight for you, as you saw him fight for you in Egypt and in the desert. There you saw how the Lord your God carried you. As parents carry their children, he carried you wherever you went until you came to this place. And I remembered when he carried me when I was the lame sheep. I knew God was telling me to use those same muscles, those same trust muscles he developed during that time. He was saying, you can use those here. Use those same muscles in this place. And then he was reminding me of something else. That phrase, there you saw how the Lord your God carried you as parents carry their children, just stood out to me. And I realized he was calling me out as her mother. He was reminding me that I have a place in her life that nobody else has. That's an extremely high call. Next to my God and my husband, my children are my next call, just as it is for you guys. And because I am her only mother, I have a unique role in her life that nobody else has. I have a voice, I have a power in her life that nobody else has. And it's a position and it's an authority in the spirit realm. You have an authority in the spirit realm for your children that no one else has because you're their mother. So I realized I could use what I had learned in my own life through my own testimony. I could use that for her. So it really helped me. It helped me to stand on solid ground because I realized I was the only one with the mom equipment. Nobody else had the mom equipment, the mom stuff. I mean, I kind of felt like a superhero, you know, super mom, because I had weapons nobody else had. I realized at that point that God had uniquely gifted me for her and for such a time as this. And I felt power that I had never had before. And I knew that God was going to parent her through me. So it wasn't on me. It was him. He was going to do it. He was giving me that added measure of faith that I had asked for, and he was doing it by letting me walk through this really, really, really hard place with him. That's how he chose to answer that prayer. So the testing, when we went to get the results of the testing, it revealed that the crux of her issues stemmed from being abandoned by her birth mother when she was little bitty. We had absolutely no idea this was a big issue for her. She had no idea. Didn't appear to be an issue for her when she was little. We were completely clueless that it made any kind of an impact on her. So because of that, it had formed a filter in her, and she processed everything through that filter of abandonment. Everything that happened, every word that was said, everything she perceived was filtered through the filter of abandonment. And so it affected her entire life, everything. How she made decisions was affected by that. Thankfully, there was a specific treatment for her, but the closest one was about 3.5 hours away. The closest licensed option was 3.5 hours away that insurance would pay for. We did have an option here in town, but it was a woman who, though she had been trained to do this therapy, she was not certified. And because she was a Christian counselor, a social worker, insurance wouldn't pay for it. So, you know, we're like, what do you do? And if any of you have ever been in this world, you think that the options are this big, and then when you start looking at it, y'all, I mean, counselor, social worker, psychiatrist, psychologist, Christian, non-Christian, it's like a maze. It's unbelievable. Talk about confusing. It's overwhelming, to say the least. So we were in an unknown land. Talk about unknown land. I was a psych major. Y'all, I was not prepared. Unknown land. So we had all these questions. Okay. What did we do wrong? Because, of course, it's got to be our fault, right? Why did no one tell us? Why did nobody tell us this was going to be a problem? Somebody should have said something, right? What is her life going to be like? What's her future going to be like? How's this going to impact her? How do we pay for this? Seriously, how do we pay for this? Is there hope? We had all these questions and more. What else? What didn't we know? Why didn't we know? How do we decide the best option? What will people think? Oh, y'all, talk about fear of man. What will people think? I went a long time without telling anybody any of this. Because I thought, what will people think about her, about me, about my ability to mother her? So we had all these questions. We had options of where to take these questions. I took these questions to my own reasoning, quickly found that well was very shallow. I took these questions to my husband, who was just as shell-shocked as I was, so he was not of much help. I took some of these questions to my daughter, thinking, surely you can make sense of this. Surely you can understand this. And she couldn't. She had, I'm expecting her to have it all worked out. She had no idea. Then, of course, I took it to all the professionals because they're supposed to know all the answers, right? They just added to the confusion. They just added more options and added to the confusion. So they really weren't much help either. I took my questions to people I knew who had similar experiences, and they were able to offer compassion and encouragement, which I desperately needed, but they couldn't tell me what to do. Ultimately, we had one source, and it was God. He was the only source that we had. So finally, I took my questions to him. And as I'd often done before, I released my daughter and the situation to him. And I've started doing this visual exercise because, again, I'm a visual person. But I remember, what I do is I'll visualize, whether it's a person, a situation, a relationship, visualize myself, not just putting them on the altar. Because, y'all, that would kind of freak me out sometimes. Because I would, leave from my prayer time and I'd be thinking, oh, she's cold. And the altar's like cold and hard. And that, because I'm visual, I'd be thinking about that. So I visualize myself handing whatever it is in this situation, handing my daughter to God, him taking her from me and asking him, where do you put her? So as I did this exercise with her, I visualized him reaching out for her, not just taking her, but reaching for her, scooping her up, like when you get a little baby, and he just scooped her up and put her right here against his chest. And he was just looking at her like she was the only thing in the world. And that she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. And he would just rock her. And just like that little nurturing baby is what I saw. And that gave me such peace, y'all. And I realized my Redeemer was redeeming what she missed. My Redeemer was redeeming what her mother didn't give her. What I couldn't give her, because she was big when I got her. She was 4 years old. I couldn't do this. So that gave me great, great peace to release her to him. So, again, because I'm visual, that really helped me. I sought his promises during that time because, again, he was my only source. And the two biggest ones that he gave me that I have clinged to are 2 Corinthians 1, 9 and 10 in the AMP. And again, these are all on your paper. It says, indeed, we felt within ourselves that we had received the very sentence of death. But that was to keep us from trusting in and depending on ourselves instead of on God who raises the dead. For it is he who rescued and saved us from such a perilous death, and he will still rescue and save us. In and on him we have set our hope, our joyful and confident expectation, that he will again deliver us from danger and destruction and draw us to himself. And then a fabulous verse, y'all. Then the next one was Isaiah 48:21 in the AMP. And they thirsted not when he led them through the deserts. He caused the waters to flow out of the rock for them. He split the rock also, and the waters gushed out. And so these are the promises that I cling to, that God was going to do these things in this time. And as I focused on the promises and not the problem, my faith, y'all, just grew and grew stronger and stronger. I knew God had saved her and saved us, and that he would continue to deliver us. Because it was pretty miraculous how he thwarted her suicide attempt. So I knew he could continue to do that. So I got on the phone and started contacting all our options as far as treatment. We had secular Christian in town, out of town, and had it narrowed down one place out of town that was, you know, the best of the best. Secular, insurance would pay for it, 3.5 hours away. And then I had one place here locally. Though she was trained, she was not certified. Insurance would not pay, but she was a Christian. I called her directly to speak to her, just because I wanted to get a feel, you know, tell me what this looks like for you. And so she started telling me, she said, well, I often use this book. This is the spiritual part. The other part is, of the therapy is not. But she said, I always, in my sessions, I pray from this book called Blessing Your Spirit. And I thought, that's the prayers I've been praying for her already. I pray those prayers for her and over her. And so I thought, that just rang for me. It didn't make my decision, but I thought, okay, we're on the same page, so I'm paying attention to that. But still, y'all, we could make arguments for and against either therapy. We didn't know. We were still in an unknown land. So, again, we went to our friend, our counselor, pastor, friend, who loved us, and he was in a position of authority over us, like I said. So we gave him the options, and we said, what do we do? And once again, he didn't hesitate. He said, you cannot take the Holy Spirit out of this therapy. If you want permanent, transformational change, you cannot take the Holy Spirit out of this therapy. So if I were you and if it were my daughter, I would do the therapy here in Birmingham with the Christian counselor. And I went, okay, that's what I needed. Again, God providing the answer that we needed. So that made the decision for us, and we started the therapy. She goes every single week to this therapy, and it's making a huge difference. The other huge thing that happened during one of our sessions with the guy that did the testing is my daughter's biggest secret was revealed. Unintentionally, well, he didn't intend it, but God intended it. My husband didn't even catch it, and no one addressed it during our meeting. So after, when we got home, I addressed it with her. And, I mean, God is just so cool, y'all. Because he brought me from a place of fear to faith, and he reminded me of my unique power and voice in her life, I realized this could be a defining moment. Here, her biggest secret has been revealed. God, what does she need to hear? What is on your heart for her? What does her heart need? And I was able to receive from him what she needed to hear in that moment. So instead of, you know, giving her rejection, I was able to give her grace and mercy and truth and hope. And my husband was able to do the same thing. And what we didn't know is that her heart was really desperate for that, that's really what she needed. And it really truly was a turning point in her life, and God used it to redeem her and to redeem all those years of being abandoned and rejected. And she was, for so many years, she wasn't abandoned and rejected, but she received it as abandonment and rejection because of that filter that I told you about, and he redeemed it. Almost instantly, he redeemed it. And she became a different person. She really, truly became different. She had learned all those years, because she felt so abandoned, she had learned to protect herself. And what that looked like, that meant hiding her failures from everyone. It meant keeping people at arm's length, because if I keep you right here, then you can't hurt me and you can't reject me. But also what that meant is that she was never really known. So she was never truly accepted, because no one ever really knew who she was. So, you know, you can imagine what that does to you if you realize that no one really knows you, so how can you truly be accepted? And it kept her isolated and alone. So when she perceived that the deal breaker of her life was now exposed and on the table, and she didn't get rejected, she didn't get abandoned, what she got was loved, accepted, and invited to deeper intimacy, she just blossomed. She became so loving. She started saying, I love you, to everybody in the family, even her brother, who won't say it back. She's like, I know you love me, Jonathan. I know you love me. I'm going to say it till you tell me back. But she didn't get her feelings hurt when he didn't say it back. She started wanting to hang out with us and spend time with us. She started saying, I'm sorry. And y'all, I don't know the last time I heard her say, I'm sorry, honestly, because she was so afraid to admit that she'd done wrong. She started saying, I messed up. She started saying, I didn't study. I'll do better next time. And y'all, and that sounds simple, but y'all, she would never admit that before because she was so afraid of her failure, of what that would do. She admits her shortcomings now, and she admits her weaknesses, knowing that help is available to her. And she really encourages me to do the same thing, because I'm not very strong in that either. So as a result of walking through all this with her, I can confidently say with conviction and with integrity that I am the perfect mother for my kids, y'all. I'm the perfect mother for my kids. And it's not because of anything that I know how to do, anything that I can do. It's because of who he is through me. It's based on who God is and his plans for us and how I've seen him show up. And you might be wondering, what difference does it make? So yeah, you know that now. What difference does it make? It makes a huge difference. Because before I would go into situations, I would have to spend a lot of time getting myself steady. I would go into it going, okay, this is really hard. I mean, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know what to do here. And I'm probably going to screw it up anyway because, you know, I usually do. And yeah, there I went and yelled again. Golly, I can't ever get it right. This is what I would do. I could eventually get to a place where maybe I could do the right thing, but it would take me a long time and I'd be really worn out. And again, it was just by the grace of God that it worked out like it was supposed to. So now, when I have a situation, whether it be somebody failed a test or somebody's late for curfew or something serious like this, I go into it with, I'm the mom. I got the mommy skills. I got the mom equipment. I have authority over the spirit realm. So Satan, back the hell up, because here I come. That's how I go into it, y'all. And it's completely different. And it's just different. And I know God has given me the equipment that I need. And I know he's going to be with me. He's going to show up for me. He's going to show up in me. And he's going to come through for my kids. Now, I have to walk through it in relationship with him. I can't do it on my own. Because if I go into it thinking that I got this, then I'm going to fail because I don't got this. God's got this. So it has completely made a difference in my relationship with my kids. It has made a difference in my relationship with my husband because not only do I have the mom equipment, I got the wife equipment. I got wife skills. I have a place in my husband's life that nobody else has. I have a voice that no one else has. I have power in the spirit realm and authority in the spirit realm that no one else in this world has. That's pretty stinking incredible, y'all. And when you think of it that way, I mean, it's pretty incredible. So the honor of having that position of being able to fight for your kids, being able to fight for your husband, being able to fight for the people in your small group, wherever you're called, whatever that looks like, there are other places that you're called. The authority that you have because you are called is huge. It's an honor, it's a privilege, and it means that you can be a unique vessel that God can use that other people don't have the same privilege to do. So it's pretty remarkable. And I've seen God show up in such amazing ways that in the moment he would give me the truth to say, and I'd be like, that was good. I wouldn't have thought of that. So it's just been really neat. One of the neatest connections that I think he made for me was how I connected these two testimonies. And it was at the last retreat in January. He gave me two verses. One was given to me by the woman who prayed for me, who had never heard either of these stories. She had no clue that any of this would make any sense to me. But it was Isaiah 35:6 in the NIV. It says, Then will the lame leap like a deer, and the mute tongue shout for joy. Water will gush forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. Remember that verse in Isaiah that he gave me about the situation that he would make waters gush forth in the desert? And then the other verse was one that he gave me the very first night of the retreat before I ever had connected any of this. And it was in Micah 4. And y'all, I don't ever think about the book of Micah. I really don't. Who does? Maybe y'all do. But literally, I was like, okay, God, where am I supposed to go? And it was Micah 4. I went, Micah. Micah? Okay, Micah. So I went to Micah 4:7 in God's Word translation. It says, I will change those who are lame into a faithful people. Shut up, y'all. Who does that? I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. He will change the lame into a faithful people. The lame sheep, the woman who did not want to be the lame sheep, who cried out, please don't make me be the lame sheep. Because I walked through these hard things in relationship with God, not by myself, not because I got this. I walked through it with him in relationship with him and in relationship with other people. He gave me that faith that I had asked for. Not how I would have picked. I would have rather it just been, poof, you have now have a greater measure of faith. I asked for faith, and this is how he chose to give it to me. And y'all wouldn't change it for anything in the whole entire world. Would not change it. So, those are my testimonies. I'm going to pray, and then I will walk you through the worksheet. Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much, God, that you are a God who can change the lame into a faithful people. God, I thank you that you are a God who answers prayer. God, that when we cry out to you, you hear us. God, that your ears are always tuned to our cries. I thank you, God, that we matter to you, that our people matter to you. God, I thank you that because of you, we have power and authority. God, that you can use us as vessels in your kingdom, God, as the hands and feet of Christ to the people that we love. So God, I just thank you for what you've done in me. God, I thank you for what you've done in these women. I know that we could spend hours just testifying to the work that you've done. But God, we're not content for that to be it. We're not content, God, to just stay where we are. So God, I just pray for all these places that we've brought out into the open this week. God, would you just come alongside us, Lord? Would you show us, God, how we can walk in relationship with you? God, would you show us that faith that you've given us? God, would you show us what it looks like, what our call looks like in each of these places? What it looks like to have the mom equipment, to have the wife equipment, to have the group leader equipment, the friend equipment, the daughter equipment. God, whatever equipment it is that we need, God, would you show us what that is? God, would you work in and through us? God, we thank you that you will always come through for us. God, we thank you that you will never leave us and never forsake us. God, we thank you that when we choose to walk with you, God, that we will never, ever, ever walk in darkness. God, I thank you that your love never fails, never gives up, and never runs out. And God, we just give you the glory. We ask all these things in Jesus' name.